Is there anything else?
No.
Oh, come on. Come on. Work with me, please. Agenda item number 13 here, pertaining to COBIA. Before we start, let me explain the process a little bit here so that y'all in the audience, some of which who may be new to the commission here, understands how we do things here. First off, I'm going to ask you to take off your hats. Second, I'm going to ask everybody to behave like Virginia gentlemen. Passions are high. People have very strong feelings about this, but we are going to have a civil and a respectful hearing and discussion on this matter. I don't know how it's going to come out. I don't think anybody knows how this is going to come out, but I am going to require people to behave with decorum. How it's going to go from a process standpoint, Chief O'Reilly is going to brief the commission on the issues. The commission is going to ask questions of staff. I'm going to open the floor here for public hearing, and you all can have your say. Come forward. I ask you to be respectful. I ask you to not filibuster, and I ask you to kind of keep it on point and to be not as redundant with what others have said as you can. Then we'll close the public hearing. The commission will have some more discussion, and a decision will be made. And then we'll adjourn. Chief O'Reilly.
Commissioner and members of the commission, good afternoon. And this has been a rather extensive situation with COBIA. And it started in February 4th, when Dr. Michelle Duvall informed the Federal and South Atlantic Board at the ASMFC that there had been an exceedance of the annual catch limit. And from time to time, for your ease, I might be saying quota. But obviously, there are differences. The annual catch limit is different from the annual catch target of 500,000 pounds, and that's what is really set for 2016, rather than the annual catch limit of 620,000 pounds. However, one thing to tell you up front is I have a slide presentation, a PowerPoint presentation, but this has been a situation with the commission since February, so I am going to go through your evaluation for the record and with the audience being able to understand what is going forward before the slideshow, and I think everyone will understand. So if you do look at your evaluation, page one, under issues, staff is going to note a few things. And up front, I will say this is not a one-person duty. Over the last several months, there have been four of us working on this. Ryan Jorley, who's not here today, did an extensive amount of analysis for us. Joe Cimino and Lewis Gillingham also were involved in this. This has been a serious issue, not only for our fishing industry, but also for the commission staff. So on page one, you'll see later on, and Katie May will hand out the summary of the public comments. And for ease, staff has divided those into three components, A, B, and C. Public comments with an A are referencing status quo. Those in the public who don't want any changes, keep everything the way it was in 2015. No changes whatsoever. In those labeled B, there's a number of them. Those are comments from the public where they do not wish to comply with the June 20th closure that the National Marine Fisheries Service has established, but they would allow for some stricter management rules, whether boat limits or raising the minimum size limit or a combination, and very rarely even in a closed season. The one thing I can say factually, there hasn't been a lot of agreement as to which of those options would be best, and I'll talk more about that in just a minute. There's no doubt that the commission is in an indirect place. And I say that because the commission is used to many compliance plans and amendments through the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. And over, easily over 100 since 1995, where the commission has had to say, well, we know this is a compliance element, and we'll have to adopt it. Everyone here knows that. Some recent ones are striped bass, where the bay had to take a 25.5% reduction as a compliance measure, and there wasn't even overfishing, as there is with cobia. It was just the target was below the target, and that was enough to get ASMFC to have the states comply. So the ASMFC has Public Law 103-206 behind it. It's a federal law. The ASMFC is not a federal entity. They're an interstate compact, but they have federal law, and since 1995, we've all understood what that means for us. In this situation, we're more remote than our relationship with ASMFC. At ASMFC, we have a voice. We have the ability to have three representatives, and we can make our issues known and vote. On the contrary, this is a South Atlantic Fishery Management Council plan for cobia, and it has been that way. And anything the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council does has to be approved by the National Marine Fisheries Service. So there are eight councils throughout the United States. This is one of them. The National Marine Fisheries Service is the ultimate authority. And so we're sort of indirect here because we're looking at a situation where the National Marine Fisheries Service has established the June 20th closure. The South Atlantic Council has to abide by that. And then what we know is that's federal waters. So the closure is in federal waters. And I'll get to Mr. Crabtree's letter so you can see what the South Atlantic Council, through the National Marine Fisheries Service, where Mr. Crabtree is asking us. So a comment on the front page still is, £1,541,535 in 2015, 2.45 times higher than the quota or the ACL. And the comment there is, we've heard a lot about the data. They're there. The data are there. We've heard a lot about MRIP and whether 39% for a proportional standard error was good enough. Those data are there. They stay there. The idea of an overfishing limit, which is further down, of 760,000 pounds, if you're over the overfishing limit, overfishing is going on. And you're going to hear that today quite a bit because it's the overfishing that has propelled staff, not immediately, not in February, not in March, not in April, but in May, to finally say, too much on this overfishing. And that really is what's guiding staff. The MSYs, I think, 880,000 pounds. So we're above maximum sustainable yield with that harvest. Page 2, and I'm going to quicken it up a little bit. Page 2, under plans for cobia management in 2017. Today it's important that the commission understand that the commission is not only looking at a decision on 2016, it needs to know what's going forward with 2017. And 2017 is coming at us because on June the 16th, there will be a South Atlantic Fishery Management Council meeting, the mackerel committee, where the cobia issues rest, and Virginia will have a representative there. And today I found out, because that's been one of the contentions about representation, we've had a representative from Virginia from the Mid-Atlantic Council for the South Atlantic Council since before 2006, and that is the case. So the South Atlantic Council is actually progressive because the Mid-Atlantic Council only in the last few years started inviting New England participation on key species like black sea bass and summer flounder. The South Atlantic Council, sometime after 1997, had voting seats on the committee available for the Mid-Atlantic Council, and there's Virginia representation. Now, what happened during that time period, pretty quiet, because other than 2006, as you'll see with the data, there really haven't been any problems, and really, there hasn't been any quota that had to be adhered to. So back in 2006, we had a very strong harvest. We've had other strong harvests, and the stock from Georgia to New York has had strong harvests, but the ACL is a new ACL for 2015, or quota. So if you look at 2017, there's a framework process that'll be talked about a little bit. And yes, there'll be a little bit of redundancy in the slides, but I think it's important. The framework means when you formulate a management plan or an amendment to that plan, you decide up front as a council that you're going to have the latitude to do framework measures. And usually the framework measures are changes in size limits, changes in possession limits, changes in season, even down to changes in the ACL, which is very important for the commission to understand that changes in the ACL on how that's judged in 2016 are very important. And the reason it's important, if you look at page 3, in the top paragraph, we have a situation where if we had zero harvest this year, the way things stand right now, so if no fish whatsoever, no cobia were caught whatsoever, we would still be above the annual catch limit or the quota because it would be 1.5 million divided by 2. It would still be above the 620,000 and the 670,000 pounds, which includes the commercial. So obviously, no one wants that, including the South Atlantic Management Council. If you look at page 31 on your own, you can see when you get a chance that the framework process is fairly extensive. And staff wants to make sure that there are representatives from the industry who will look at this framework process. So going into June 16th, there'll be an acknowledgement of what's possible. But the one thing that hasn't been possible is variable measures by state. The framework can't set an allocation. That would take an amendment. That would take probably a year and a half to give an allocation. So, for example, we harvested 43% of all the Georgia to New York component of harvest from 2013 to 15. So that would be 215,000 pounds. And that would be an allocation for us, but nothing exists to give us an allocation. So what we did at the bottom of page 3 is we did look at ways that we could maybe go forward. And you there's some indication there that there's no allocation possible. So we turned to the ASMFC, which you're going to find in a little bit down this presentation. And the ASMFC process was certainly one where everyone supported it. Even National Marine Fisheries Service supported it. So in the ASMFC process, we have exactly what I mentioned earlier. We have a voice. We have three representatives. We have a vote. We could have an allocation scheme. How quickly that happens, no one knows. But in August at the ASMFC, there will be a white paper to look at three options about cobia management in the ASMFC. Joint management with the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council. Complementary management, which someone's going to have to define pretty clearly what that means. It's less than joint management, perhaps. And the third one is exclusive management by the ASMFC, which happened with Red Drum. Red Drum used to be a South Atlantic Fishery Management Council plan till about maybe a dozen years ago, and the ASMFC took over that management plan. So those are some options we have to look forward to. One thing about the ASMFC is that there's some initial pushback that we'll have to, you know, see how it works out. But some states don't like joint federal management with the ASMFC because the federal entities take the lead. When you look at these recreational and commercial ACLs and you look at the ACT, all that is done at the federal level. It's done by the Scientific and Statistical Committee, and Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization says that it is that committee, the Scientific and Statistical Committee, that once it sets the allowable biological catch, that's it. That's the ceiling. So the acceptable biological catch is here, the overfishing limit is here, MSY is here. In 2015, data, complaints, everyone can see something about the data, but, you know, the truth is that even if someone thinks the data were less in any amount and you pick it, it was still a high harvest year, and that's what we're really dealing with. And we are dealing with overfishing. So I'm going to talk about the management measures in other states on page 5 pretty quickly, just to tell you that one thing we did, Mr. Ballard had a request that we look at what 210,000 pounds, which was mentioned at the commission meeting, would be like for us for a season. And we took it a step further, and we looked to see what all the states, Georgia through Virginia, and keep in mind New York is the end point here, but there's been no recorded harvest in New York and New Jersey or Delaware. So we looked at that, and we then talked to the states. And we had very nice conversations, but frankly, there's no leverage. There's no allocation. It doesn't exist. Georgia seemed very concerned that its fishery would close June 9th if we were allowed to keep fishing. South Carolina told us, you can't believe what we've been doing. We've had this genetic work. We've identified our spawning aggregation of cobia. We are, they have been, in May on a hook and release only, and they also have set conservative boat and personal limits, and they're closing June 20th. I mean, that happens automatically. North Carolina, the reason we're meeting today, we had held out some hope that we could forge some agreement to extend the season. And one problem with extending the season is early on it was pretty clear, and even the person at National Marine Fisheries Service who did the analysis for us was surprised that the best we could do was extend the season by 8 days. And that was with a very large 51-inch minimum size limit and a very small allocation of a one fish, one cobia boat limit. And that's the best we could do. Well, we were surprised too, but we also know that the one thing about the data are no one caught more than three fish in 2014 and 15. Not a single entity, private boat, charter boat, whatever, that caught more than three fish. So that's what really narrowed down our ability to really have much to save from that harvest. And I think what happened with our fishing representatives is they saw that, and the comments that we had were, well, if we're stuck with that boat limit, we're going to be stuck for more than just 2016, which I don't think is the case. I think 2017 framework measures will overtake anything that's done in 2016. And 2017 framework measures are intended to keep the Georgia through New York stock of cobia under the annual catch limit, and they put a little buffer in called the annual catch target of 500,000 pounds for variability. And we've seen some of that variability here this year, a little bit early on the catches of cobia. So the National Marine Fisheries Service already put in a buffer for that. Will that buffer cover what North Carolina did? We don't know. All we know about North Carolina is from July 1 to the end of their season, they can have about just under 9% of their total harvest. But now we're talking it starts earlier, right after June 20th. So we have some days in there that would add on to that 9%. Probably will not be covered by the buffer completely, and we're in a bad situation with the ACL. If you look at page 5 also, the idea that South Carolina, with their genetic work, Dr. Neal and I have had some exchanges about VIM's approach and that they're going to and are embarking on some genetic work. And in addition, staff here has talked to Mike Denson from South Carolina, DNR, and there's an open invitation for us to give genetic samples to South Carolina. That was one of the benefits of the phone call that we had to the other states. But overall, it's not that we were refused this allocation, it's just everyone recognized there's no allocation. It's not in the plan. If you look at a situation on page 6, we know where we are in Virginia. We're at the tail end, pretty much, of the movement of cobia. And so we have that situation where it's sort of uncomfortable because all of a sudden they're setting these measures and asking for compliance, but at the same time, keep in mind this June 20th closure is based on all the harvest, state waters and federal waters. It's not just federal waters harvest. It's the entire Georgia to Virginia harvest. I do want to take you back for a second into the packet and take you to some of the correspondence, which is important. We have a letter on page 22 at the bottom of your evaluation. And this is from Congressman Whitman, and he notes the large increase from 2014 to 2015. And in that particular letter, what he's really asking Eileen Sobeck, who's the assistant administrator, so she's, you know, reporting to the Deputy Secretary of Commerce, I would imagine, he's asking her about the assessment and the fact that the assessment, even in the chair of the South Atlantic Council, who's Dr. Duvall, she made the reference that it's a stale assessment because it only goes through 2011. And here we are in 2016. But keep in mind, the assessment was completed in 2013. And if you know anything about stock assessments, one thing is it takes a while to do them. And the second is there aren't that many stock assessment scientists to go around. We wish there were more, but there's a better need for stock assessments. There's no doubt about it. So that was mainly the situation, and there was a follow-up which was handed out to you, and it's May 19th, 2016, also from Congressman Whitman. And here, some of the situations with National Standard 4 is pointed out, which essentially says there can't be discrimination among the states. And in addition, we've also heard about National Standard 8, which is more or less not giving the right payment of information and consideration for the economic burdens, to paraphrase it a little bit. And staff would just point out that we understand that this does hit us pretty hard. We understand that. But keep in mind we're indirect. So the national standards, anyone who wants to challenge a national standard is challenging the National Marine Fisheries Service. We have our standards, and I'll show you one of them, but even then, it's not going to bear on cobia because of our position in the management chain. I do want to go forward just a little bit because anything you ever want to know about the mechanics of what's involved in this cobia situation and what involves starts on page 24, and it is Dr. Duvall's response, because she received the same letter that National Marine Fisheries Service, and she responded, and it's very lengthy, but it goes point by point through the history of how things managed to get to this state. And she also talks about the assessment, and she has a bottom line on page 26, which has been one of the issues, that recreational quota or ACL decreased from 1.44 million pounds, with Florida being part of the stock unit up to New York, and it went down to 690,000 pounds. And there's a lot of controversy about that. I think at the one hearing I heard, Dr. Duvall said, if it's that significant and that important, then that has to be addressed by the South Atlantic Council, back through NIMS, to get that Key West boundary again rather than the line between Florida and Georgia. But nonetheless, even with, and you'll see it, even with Florida still with us in this zone, East Florida, there was still overfishing. Not as pronounced, you know, 500,000-600,000 pounds, not as pronounced as 2.4 times greater. So Dr. Duvall took a large step to provide Congressman Whitman with as thorough an explanation as possible. And towards the bottom of page 4, she definitely points out that there is overfishing. And, you know, that's something that on the 5 lines up from the next to last paragraph, based on 2015 landings exceeding the overfishing level, overfishing occurred in 2015. There's a reason that NIMS hasn't yet said but will say overfishing occurred in 2015. The reason is they have to put it in a rule. It has to be published, and it has not yet been published. The executive director of the South Atlantic Council at the recent May 9th Kitty Hawk public comment period and question period, I listened, and the first time he didn't say much, but the second time he talked about the harvest, he said, yes, there's likely overfishing. Well, we don't think there's a likely involved at all. I mean, because you can't exceed MSY and the OFL and say it's likely overfishing unless you have a very good way to change all the data. And it is that simple. So just a couple more things. Page 29 is a letter to Robert Beal, who is the executive director of the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. The letter's from Dr. Duvall, and you pretty much know the sentiments. It's our sentiments, ones that the commissioner expressed at the policy board just recently at the ASMFC, that we do think it's time that ASMFC has involvement. And how that takes shape, we're not sure. And then on page 31, that's the easy approach to show you about the way that the framework for 2017 can work. And I'll have a slide for you about the framework, which is pretty telling about the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council as far as what their intentions are for 2017. On page 33, you have a COBIA fact sheet, which should be helpful to you no matter when this is looked at. And staff would say that today is very important, but there's going to be other days like this because we're now in a situation where we're constantly going to have to be looking at the best way to manage the harvest. So this is really just the start in 2016. And the fact sheet is very good. And what it does on the page 34 is the information that Mr. Ballard had asked about, and it shows you this is what we went to the other states and asked them about. 215,000 pounds would have closed our fishery on July 14th. North Carolina, just a little more, 235,000 June 6th. And I told you about the June 9th comment from Georgia, which is Georgia's strictly EEZ, federal waters. Nothing in the state waters. South Carolina has gone that way, except for the catch and release in May. North Carolina is back and forth. If you took a long-term average, it might be 60% in-state. I'm saying that off the cuff. And Virginia's more so in-state. And then overall in 2015, the reason this makes it very difficult, the in-state waters for those four states were 82%. Of the entire harvest. And yet, you have to figure out, well, National Marine Fisheries Service is closing the federal waters, but what do they really expect? And there is a letter in your packet, and it does come from Roy Crabtree, and if I don't find it fast enough, that'll be okay. But essentially, Dr. Crabtree is encouraging the states to please comply with the June 20th closure. The other materials, I'm going to try and speed it up a little bit. On page 37, you have the proportional standard error that I talked about. And you have the 92,000 trips, which really were flabbergasting a lot of folks, but I'll go over on the slideshow and I'll explain that a little bit better. And we had some Fishery Management Advisory Committee meetings in March and April. They're in your packet. March was fairly tame because all we were requesting was to go to advertisement. We thought we were going to do this in April. April was not so tame a meeting because we had differences of opinion. And what the commission just did with Robert's Rules of Order was pretty good, but at FMAC it was unknown. So what happened is you'll see that in April there was a 4-3 vote on going to the three fish with one over 50 inches, but there were plenty of members, it seemed, to staff who didn't want that option. They wanted something else. But it got so jumbled that no one thought to make a substitute motion, and staff takes the responsibility for not advising each committee Robert's Rules of Order, because, you know, that was just sort of an unfortunate situation, and clearly a 4-3 vote does not tell us much. It really doesn't. So we go through the FMAC, and I think we go all the way back to October 20th, 2015 is the last part I'm going to have in here, and that's where it was really befuddling to staff, because there was a letter we received by one of the clubs to have a boat limit for Cobia. This is back in October of 2015. And when staff went to talk to the particular person, the person wasn't there. But the other clubs who were there said, yes, we want these boat limits and we want to do this. Well, it turned into no one really was solidified. No one really had a good idea. And Chairman Jeff Deem contacted me afterwards and said, should we have a process where they can air their information, we get to something? I said, well, you know, really, they have to come to some sort of stable option before we can do that. So that's back in October of 2015. And you have the comments, and thank you for allowing me to revisit a lot of the things the commission has already been part of. And I'll just go to the presentation now. So what we talked about, I called it indirect, but the management authority, this is a federally managed stock. In fact, it's a South Atlantic Fishery Management Council management plan. And the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council develops the plan, but everything that goes forward from that point in any of the eight councils has to be supported and agreed to by the National Marine Fisheries Service. And we talked about these two votes. I know that didn't satisfy a lot of folks, but I hope, knowing that Virginia was part of that process, but the process wasn't really detailed until the reauthorization, until the South Atlantic Council started to have accountability measures, AMs. That's when the process really began.
Just a question. You mentioned that the Mid-Atlantic Council, which is going to be you.
Go ahead.
You're going to be our representative.
Yes.
At this next meeting.
Yes.
Has two votes. But that's just at the committee level.
That is the committee.
You do not have a vote at the entire SFA.
That is absolutely correct. It's on the mackerel committee.
Right.
You don't vote at the full council.
Okay.
Thank you. And so just had some information here, which has been another one of the questions we've had. And what this graph shows you is you have the pounds of harvest here. You have two different lines running horizontally. The green one is the current ACL, 620,000 pounds. And the purple line is the ACL if East Florida was still part of our management unit. And what you can see is, regardless of which line you want to look at, there's a few problems, like five in the time period up to 2015, which is very high, 400% increase. But the same thing can be said for Florida, and certainly there were maybe less, but there still were overages or overfishing. Now, the trick is this line is drawn for your information. The ACL wasn't really there, and I think you heard Ryan Jorley say that last time in this slide, that the ACL creeps in November 2014 with the new ACL for 2015. But as a point of reference, it's not as if there haven't been high harvests before. So that's the reference on that slide. This is the one you're more familiar with. This shows, and I should say in the past that the harvest was 500 to 600,000, even with East Florida in. So we would get there, if we get back to a line where it's Key West, we get their harvest, as well as any additional ACL. It's hard to say whether that's a benefit or not. I think it's really hard to say. I think most people think it is, though. Coastwide, Georgia, New York in blue. So there are five times where the, and again, this line is drawn for convenience to show you the performance of the stock and the harvest specifically, but really 2015, Virginia in the yellow line, certainly had a very high harvest in 2006, and we looked, the amount of fish was pretty close, you know, about 21,000 versus 22,000 plus fish here. So we did look at that. You may see some discrepancies in your material as to what the actual Virginia harvest was, whether it was 860,000 pounds or 715,000 plus. That's because when NIMS did their analysis, they used weight data that they had too. They didn't use the MRIP weight data. So overall, the 1.54 million pound total for Georgia to New York is correct, but Virginia, at least according to National Marine Fisheries Service, is less than the 860,000. They're 718 or 15,000. This has been a source of discussion, I'll put it that way. So 2011 is here, and you know, if you go back a little bit, 2006 is right here. So we had high harvest here, not so high down here, but you see overall that there has been a stock decline. And John Carmichael, when he went over the stock assessment report at the March 10th meeting of the South Atlantic Council, he just said, this is now down to 1.29 times this spawning stock biomass at MSY, which is just a term to you, but it means you really don't want to get it below that. The ratio is 1.29 to 1. 1 to 1 is here, and below 1 is problematic for the stock. The big take home here is back here it was about 2.5 times higher than SSB MSY. And then on the right, you know, you draw your own conclusions, but here is 2011. So here's 2012, 13, 14, 15. How is that going to look once the assessment is done? And it doesn't look as if an assessment is going to be done and really completed until early 2019, which is a long way away. And we don't know exactly what it will show, but we do know that the way the models are, from a very basic level, if you're loading additional mortality harvests into the model, then the output is telling you it has an impact on that fishing mortality or exploitation rate and the SSB. And the impacts aren't favorable, but that's, you know, we still have to wait and see what other factors go into the assessment. And there's not a whole lot of independent information, but you know, we still have to wait and see. And you know, I think the executive director of the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, who's you know, pretty sharp, he told the crowd at Kitty Hawk, he said, well, you know, when we do the model and when we do the assessment, the results might not be, you know, what you expect. And I mean, that's just a point of discussion. Others will say, from what we see, the population looks good. They're there. From others, you'll see or hear that, you know, you don't see as many 50 to 55 inch cobia. I mean, so, I mean, those are all just discussion points that I hate to say it, but we're going to be talking about this for a few years. This gives you the data about what's involved here. Here's the harvest, and here we have a situation where in 2016 we've dropped to 670,000 on the acceptable biological cap. Remember, you cannot go above that. The ABC is the ceiling. Overfishing limit is set first, and then the acceptable biological catch. So we have a 620,000-pound recreational ACL that cannot be exceeded. And to do that, a little buffer was put in to where 500,000 is the annual catch target. And so I think the only thing to indicate here is, you know, the obvious conclusion is there's overfishing. Dr. Duvall indicated that. Greg Waugh of the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council pointed to that likelihood, and we don't understand the likelihood. I mean, it's clear that that's going to be what National Marine Fisheries Service says. And again, from what I recall, MSY is 880,000 pounds. And so one thing I didn't add, these are iteratively less by intention. So after the assessment, it was decided that the good year classes, which were moving through and being fished on, they needed to have some measures in place to account for the fact that it wouldn't quite always stay that way. And that's the rationale that we've read, at least, as to why these dip down from 670 down to 620,000. So NIFS uses some weight estimates, as I told you, and pins us at 718,647 pounds. So that is really what is going forward, not the 860,000 pounds from MRIP. Nonetheless, you know that we, based on the data, we eclipsed the ACL or the quota just as one state, and North Carolina was right there as well. So this is the one that comes out of MRIP, but this is what we're going by. You can see that here we went up almost three times as much from the 2006-2014 average, just about three times greater for North Carolina in 2015, 1.5 times increase for South Carolina, and Georgia declined by, you know, 57%. Overall, a 2.53% change, or 2.53 times, and a 153% change from the average of 2006 to 14. So this gets at something that really irked a lot of people, I think, out in the fishing public about the effort and the trips. And so finally we were able to get some clarification from John Foster at National Marine Fisheries Service. And what it turns out to be, those 92,400 trips were not boat trips. They are angler trips. So if you're on a charter boat and you have a six-pack, or if you pay the extra and have one or two more, each of you contributes to that six or seven or eight angler trip. If you're on a private boat and there's three of you, each of you are contributing to that angler trip. So if you had the information about the number of boats, you could divide it into the 92,400, and that would tell you how many boat trips you had. And for reference, staff shows you some of the other species. So, you know, red drum was just under cobia for what are known as primary target directed trips. And black drum really was low. And you'd expect Atlantic croaker, summer flounder, and striped bass be high. But, you know, neither or none, I should say, of these three species are enjoying a great time in Virginia waters. I mean, summer flounder harvest is down, has been down for about 3-4 years. Atlantic croaker already peaked, it looks like, but we hope for good year classes. and striped bass were under an ASMSC mandate to reduce both in the bay and in the ocean. So these numbers would be higher in a prolific year, such as we've seen for all three of these species at other times. The other part of that 92,000 plus estimate is you've got about 20,000 shore trips in there, which means that they just had to have that as their primary interest. It doesn't mean that they caught any or not. And in fact, Lewis tells us that none of the intercepts showed up for them anyway. So, but I thought that was something that really did get our fishermen agitated, and I'm glad that we could at least get the information. So, you know, this is sort of trying to be optimistic, but, you know, I don't know what else to tell you, but if we have a June 20th closure, we have about a five-week season. Things started early. We know very well that this fishery gets into September if things are pretty good. We also know we have a bouncing back from importance. The last 3 years, July, August, are the big months. But in between 2014, when the harvest was lower, it was really earlier. It was really June was showed up even higher, but the harvest was low. 2006 is what's meant by here, and we've had other years which have been high. And a note here, this is more for the ASMSC when it gets to the avenue of some type of allocation that we certainly know what our abilities have been. I mean, we've looked at the data back all the way back to 1981. That's the first time we have recreational data. And Virginia's been consistent. It had some low periods in there in the 90s, but Virginia's been a consistent contributor to the overall harvest, and that's going to be reflected, I hope, both at the South Atlantic Council June 16th and also as we go forward with the ASMSC. Summary of public comments, which you have. A and B are essentially non-compliance. It's not trying to pigeonhole anything there. It's just the state of the matter is there's overfishing, and to keep the waters open in option B but have other regulations is still non-compliance. And the troubling aspect is that no one has really, and it's because all this should have been done before 2015, quite frankly, but who knew? So no one has a determined approach to this, and we've heard a lot of different approaches. The FMAC was three fish, 50 and over. I'm going to show you some of the other approaches in just a second. I think we actually had four public comments. This was before this was updated, and, you know, supporting the closure. But overall, most of the comments are, you know, not accepting that. Yes.
Just to make sure that I have this right, these were the public comments we received before last Thursday and the board packets went out. The blue sheets include all the comments that came in afterwards, and some of them are signed by multiple people.
Thank you.
Correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. Thank you, Commissioner. So that is correct. As a matter of fact, we had comments, which I have here, prior to even the public notice going out. And most of those comments would fall in option A and B. So we've had comments since March. So input controls. And this is staff's interpretation. Input controls aren't the same as output controls. So output controls, you know very well. You have a quota. When 80% or 90% of the quota is taken, you narrow things down for the harvesters, and when it's projected that you've reached that quota, you close. You know, we do that for nine different species on the commercial end. On the recreational end, we had a striped bass quota from 1997 until 2014 among the bay jurisdictions, and we could not do that because most of our harvest, 85% roughly, occurs in wave six, and the data comes in February. So we had no way to take care of that. But changes in minimum size limits, establishment of vessel limit, combination of both, and that effectiveness depends on, are the fish available? And yes, they're usually available at certain times. What's the effort response of anglers? Is there a ramping up that takes place? So I imagine if you're a cobia fisherman that you're wanting to get some trips in that you may not have gotten in other years before June 20th under the possibility that the commission closes fishery June 20th. That's just recoupment. And I want to talk about input controls compared to black sea bass and summer flounder. So the ASMSC has input controls. When we had a lot of problems with summer flounder going from a 15-inch size limit up to a 19-inch size limit, back and forth and back down to a 16-inch size limit, we had to put in measures, size, season, possession, that we thought would constrain the harvest, recreational harvest, to a target, to a quota. And sometimes we were successful, sometimes we were too successful, and sometimes we weren't successful. But with input controls, eventually you're going to do what is required, because you're going to keep, you only have some of the options. Eventually it will work out. And that's the sort of the saga of black sea bass and summer flounder. And black sea bass is still going on. There's still reductions and still plans to reduce. And that's six out of the last 7 years. So the angling clubs, all are forms of non-compliance. The Virginia Saltwater Sport Fish Association, they would be ranked under option A, keep the state waters open, no regulation changes. The Peninsula Saltwater Sport Fishing Association, no change to the length limit, 37 inches total length. Three fish daily vessel limit, only one cobia over 50 inches allowed per vessel per day. And the Norfolk Angler Club, 40-inch total minimum size limit, no vessel limit. So, you know, again, if you really had to ask the question, we don't know what these will do because we don't know how this will change effort. We don't know if you raise the size limit, do you really save? If you raise the size limit to 40 inches, do you really save the 37, 8, and 9-inch fish? You have to throw them back. There's a little bit of mortality. But then do you go home or do you catch an even larger fish? I mean, it's hard to say. That's why they're input controls. It's very difficult to assess them. So here are the options right here. And we place these in terms of what was proposed to us by West Blow originally, and Mr. Ballard also wanted to see this information. A 215,000 pounds, which is an unofficial share that, as I told you, none of the other states really saw as, you know, having any meaning in the management plan itself. And so you can see that the three options, the three clubs are right there. A closing date would be July 24th with the Peninsula Saltwater Fishermen Association Club and the Norfolk Anglers Club. It would be July 20th. So we're imposing those on the options based on what started out as what's a fair share. And, of course, the VSSA, they didn't want to close season, so it was left alone. Here are some other options based on this unofficial share. So I should say that if you're wondering why all these options are here, it's because staff did a lot of homework as far as what can we possibly do. And it was only until 10 days ago that the last chance to do something with North Carolina, which National Marine Fisheries Service promoted for us to do, we heard from their commission chairman. And he told Commissioner Bull that, you know, his opinion was North Carolina was going to go out of compliance. So in the meantime, we worked up many, many different options. And certainly when we get to the ASMFC, these are the type of options that probably should carry some weight, as well as with the South Atlantic Council. And there are various size limit changes, various vessel limit changes, and various closure dates. So a lot was done without knowing when we had to say we're not going to get a joint plan. I think National Marine Fisheries Service is really interested in North Carolina and Virginia having a joint plan. However, the problem there is, even as a joint plan, after June 20th, we would not have gotten a tremendous, to say the least, season extension, but they may have figured out with these type of options, if North Carolina had reciprocating options, that it would. So just to remind you, just for Virginia, if we had a 51-inch limit, which I'll show you why we wouldn't want that, minimum size limit, and a one-fish boat limit, we could get a substantial season. But, I mean, that's asking a lot. So here are some pros and cons about regulations. You can protect a larger portion of the population with a length limit. However, fish that are harvested are larger on average. Have to have a restrictive vessel limit because, unfortunately, we don't see anything beyond three in any of our data from 2014 or 15. And then the idea of having something over 50 inches, and, you know, you just wonder what that'll do in terms of the overall harvest. I mean, I don't think anyone can say exactly what happens until you get the information back. But those are just sort of ideas that you can have about input controls. So Old Dominion University has had a study, and for male cobia, the average size was 41 inches, with 25% of the male cobia greater than 43 inches. Female cobia, the average size 44 inches, only 25% larger than 48.5 inches. So here's a suggestion, and definitely speaks to that 50-inch limit with one fish boat limit that was part of the Virginia scenario to get to June 28th. If you go up higher than 42 inches total, you are going to be putting pressure on females. Cobia. Now, we don't have a lot of gonadal maturity data. We have some, and briefly, I mean, I think everyone knows we have spawning cobia, and that's, you know, that still needs to be borne out by studies. But we have field observations of gravid females, obviously. 2017, talked about this earlier. You know, if we have a zero in 2016, we're still over the quota, the ACL. So the South Atlantic Council has plans to change things so that only the 2016 harvest will be measured against the 2016 annual catch limit. And if we stay under, there's a full season for 2017. If we don't, then 500,000 pounds again for the annual catch target. South Atlantic Council told us that it would mean non-compliance means closing sooner than June 20th, next time around federal waters, all the way up to closing federal waters, since that's their purview, that's their authority. And so I think you can see how this works when you're not directly able to affect the management, but only indirectly, but yet you are right there as one of the principals with the harvest. So these are framework measures that were already talked about March 10th, and raising the fork length, so add quite a few inches for anything that's up here on the fork length to the total length. Daily vessel limits 1 to 6, bag limit of 1 or 2 fish. We've had a 1 fish possession limit since 2002, so we won't benefit from that. North Carolina just established one this year. They won't benefit from that. So we keep trying to figure this out. as everyone else does, and things change, but staff had the question for the South Atlantic Council Executive Director, what can we do with the framework? Because the thought was, if they do the framework, and they do it in such a way that they do the size limits, and they do the boat limits, and they do everything else, all it does is perpetuate a bad situation for Virginia, because they'd be standard, you know, measures. Everyone would have to go to 39 inches, let's just say, as an example, total length. Everyone would have to go to 3-fish boat limit. Well, doing that doesn't really benefit us. So the South Atlantic Council Executive Director, we talked to him, and they cannot do allocation, but they can, if you read this, they could look at area-specific situations. They could look at our situation. They wouldn't have to slant everything for a uniform approach like they did with the June 20th closure. And so Mr. Waugh spoke to the general counsel of NOAA, and apparently she did not think that there was any problem with doing that in the framework, but if there is, we'll hear about it. And essentially having different regulations in different areas. And, you know, that's, again, that's something that we didn't have before. So we have these regulatory amendments, unlawful for any person aboard any private recreational fishing vessel, charter boat, headboat, possess a board or land any cobia harvested recreationally without first having obtained a recreational cobia landing permit. This is something that most of the fishing public wants to see. The South Atlantic Council is thinking of entertaining logbooks for the charter fleet. I don't know how that will end up. There's a lot on also having the apps to be able to report. You know, that's definitely going to be the future. In the meantime, staff reminded those who are here at FMAC, you know, we have these permits, but then we need reporting. You know, if it's going to be mandatory reporting, you need to report even a trip where you have a zero, but you're fishing for cobia, you need to report. I mean, all that's important. We had about a 43% return for the trophy striped bass permit that we did. And, you know, that was a little disappointing. But it's, you know, it may be better here. I think there's more information here that the, you know, the fishermen are more interested to try and help out. And then, of course, the staff recommendation in 2016, it shall be unlawful to possess on board a vessel or land in Virginia any recreational harvested cobia once NOAA Fisheries has closed the recreational cobia fishery in federal waters. And this gives you some of the ideas of the permit that you have to report. And these are the requirements that you have to fulfill. And we can gear up for that. We already have started to gear up for that, of course. So it's just a matter of, you know, this may be just the kind of help that we need as we go forward. Not in 2016, but, you know, forward. And the part here is if you don't comply with the reporting requirements, there's no permit the following year, and that really should be tied to any permits, really. So there's the staff recommendation on this part of it, and I appreciate getting an opportunity to present all the information and to talk about 2017 plans, and that will continue.
Thank you, Chief. I want to thank you and the rest of the staff, Joe and Ryan and Lewis. You've done a lot of work on this for the last 4 months, and I personally am very appreciative of that.
Thank you.
It's been an all-hands-on-deck issue for the last quarter of the year here to get us to this point, and I'm not sure anybody is truly satisfied with where we're at. I imagine there's some questions from the commission. Mr. Neal, do you want to take lead?
Sure. All right. The ACT basically is just a number picked in the management plan due to the imprecise nature of the guesstimate of catch, correct?
The ACL?
T.
Oh, ACT?
Yeah.
ACT is already established.
Right.
When the ACL is established. So I asked about that. As a matter of fact, I appreciate you saying that. Yesterday, we asked National Marine Fisheries Service. I might be able to pull it up, and that'll help answer your question if I'm lucky enough. I've got a lot of materials here, so I can tell you the gist of what was said. We had had an official in higher executive branch ask the commissioner, and I don't have it right now, but to ask the commissioner, can't we push back this June 20th closure? And, you know, what can we really do? Is that something that has any sway in it at all? I'll use that words. And we contacted National Marine Fisheries Service, and the response came back that the ACT is already established, can't be changed except by addendum or amendment, and nothing else is going to happen in 2016. And I think we suspected that answer, but when you're asked by, you know, someone up in the government chain, you make sure you want to ask the question. So I don't know whether that helps you. I think that the ACT, more importantly, is a buffer against just exactly what we see in Virginia this year, maybe a little earlier than usual, and you're the person who would know that as much as anyone, but I don't think it takes care, perhaps, of what North Carolina's put in place. That's hard to say.
Right, but going over the ACT has no management consequences.
That's correct.
Okay.
You have to exceed the 620,000 pounds.
Which, in the slide you showed, our ACL and the overfishing limit, which was 760,000 pounds, is going down every year just because?
No overfished, just overfishing.
I know, but the numbers.
Yes.
So 760,000 pounds in 2015 is going to be 750 or 740,000. So when does that end? I mean, that just keeps going down every year until new stock assessment?
It stays the same, far as I know, going forward until there's a new stock assessment. When there's a new stock assessment, those can change. But my understanding of the reason that they went down was because after the assessment, they knew they had good year classes. They knew those year classes would be fished down to some extent. So they wanted to have protection. They lowered the ACL from 670,000 pounds, I think it was, in 2013. Down to 620,000 pounds in 2000.
We've bottomed out now. That's not going to continue.
From what I know, it's bottomed out until there's an assessment.
All right. Over, the stock's not overfished. Officially, overfishing hasn't occurred yet just because NOAA hasn't announced it yet. But you're sure they are going to announce it because we went over 760,000 pounds in 2015.
Yeah.
So it's based totally on a one-year spike of MRIP numbers. So it was not overfishing in 2014?
Because of the way the ACL is.
Okay.
It's unfortunate, but the ACL is only 2015. There's no multi-year averaging. So that's the situation that they're in. That's the situation National Marine Fisheries Service is in. They have 1 year.
All right. So there was a one-year spike and 1 year of overfishing. But there was no overfishing in 2014.
There was no overfishing in
2013, 2012. So this is because of a one-year spike in MRIP numbers. So 2016, the MRIP numbers come back more into where we've been. Overfishing magically disappears?
I'm trying to pull up that slide for you to ask me that again.
All right. Basically, if MRIP numbers come in under 760,000 pounds
right.
in this year, then this overfishing that keeps being bandied around goes away.
If we stay under the ACL.
No.
Right?
No, no. The overfishing limit was 760,000
yes.
pounds.
Yes.
So if we come in under 760,000 pounds.
No.
No?
No. No, the overfishing limit is the starting point.
And so then you have to come down
ABC is next, the acceptable biological catch. Then you have the ACL, and then you have the ACT. So the OFL is just related to MSY.
Okay.
Okay. So the OFL is something that's already set. The ceiling, remind you, is the ABC. That's the ceiling. You don't get above that. But to ensure you don't get above that, for scientific uncertainty, they establish the ACL. And that's really what we're talking about here. So
Okay, but that's not what made us being overfishing. Overfishing is because we went over 760,000 pounds, not because we went over 620.
I think what you're going to find is that since we exceeded the ACL, we are overfishing. I think that's what the determination will be, because that already includes the scientific uncertainty. So when you run a model and you run an assessment, the scientists on the scientific and statistical committee determine how much below the OFL can the fishery stand. And that's the ABC, acceptable biological catch.
And what number is that?
That was 670,000. That was the sum of the recreational and commercial ACLs.
Okay, where is 760,000?
I've got a slide of that, by the way.
Where is 760,000 pounds coming?
That's the overfishing limit.
Okay, and so when we get down below that limit, what happens? Nothing? We still are overfishing?
ACL is what's determining the overfishing, not the OFL. The OFL is a biological safety mechanism that you don't get near because the Scientific and Statistical Committee sets below the OFL. The OFL is something that comes out of the assessment, and that's not even approached. What's approached is the ACL, and if you go over the ACL, you're going to be overfishing. But regardless of that, you didn't mention MSY. Now, MSY is 880,000 pounds.
But my whole question was that you basically stated overfishing is occurring because we had gone over 760,000 pounds.
Right. So that, no, not 760.
Well, that was when your earlier statement, that's where that came from. That's why
we had a nice discussion, and I apologize if I said that, but no, that's not the case.
So any time that we're over the ACL, then it's right. declared overfishing.
That's the ACL is a proxy for the acceptable biological catch, but includes, it's always lower because it includes scientific uncertainty about the stock or about their ability to set the exploitation or fishing mortality rates or spawning stock biomass. Hmm. So it's complicated.
So if we come under 620,000 in 2016, overfishing goes away.
Yes. I think you started there too. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Anything else, Mr. Neal?
Oh, I thought it was something.
Okay, reload.
Yeah, Mr. Zedrin.
Reload. Mr. Zedrin.
Okay. I saw your recommendation there. Was there any consideration given to a recommendation that that no gas be used? And how would that affect mortality?
Yes, sir. That's in the. I'm coming back to the regulation itself after this because on your packets you have the actual regulation. I think it's back about page 6 or so. And it's after the public notice, so it's actually on page 14. And gaffes certainly are promoted not to be used. Not everyone has agreed with that, and you'll hear from the public, but certainly a majority have agreed with that.
Rob, I don't think we see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either. Any of the gang see Gaff? I don't see it either. Well, I know it's advertised, so yeah, it's advertised on page 12 at the bottom there. So we can add that in since it's been properly noticed. Appreciate the question.
Yes.
And of course, you're going to want to hear the public comments on that because they weren't unanimous about that.
Other questions?
Yes.
Mr. Tackett?
When we look at Congressman Whitman's and letter, he talks about a couple of things that he's concerned about, and one of them is the data collection methods used to make the decision. And he talks about the fact that the last study was conducted in 2012. You know, it seems like that is a particularly long period of time. I mean, is this really the best scientific information available for us to make this decision? And then when you first question. Yeah. What's your response to that?
My response is it's really 2013 when that assessment was completed, but the important part is it goes through 2011. So we're sitting on at least 4 years of data, which is not atypical. You know, if you can get a stock assessment update in 3 years, you're doing very well, and it's all a matter of what I said earlier, that stock assessment scientists are not plentiful, and if you go to some of the meetings, what you hear is a call for many stock assessments, such as at the ASMSC, and they have to turn down certain ones. Now, the National Marine Fisheries Service, through Woods Hole, they have a stock assessment process, stock assessment review, and a stock assessment workshop. And they have schedules that are advertised usually a year and a half in advance. So you might know that we have about 21 species, I think, that we comply with the ASMSC.
Right.
Imagine the other species, and every time you turn around, someone wants a new stock assessment. So it seems like the South Atlantic Council's been pretty firm that it won't be done until late 2018, maybe 2019 early. So when they do an update compared to a benchmark stock assessment, so a benchmark stock assessment such as what they did back in 2013, anything novel, anything new is fair game for the assessment scientists to try and include. New independent surveys, a trawl survey, a hull survey, a hook and line survey. Anything is fair game independent, and dependent is typically your recreational catch harvest and your commercial harvest. Maybe some catch per unit effort data, something like that. When they do the update of that benchmark, every way the model was constrained is exactly the same. The only thing they're adding is any update of any independent information or any fishery-dependent information such as the harvest. So the one thing to consider is with an update, they would be doing just that. They would be putting in 2012 to maybe 2017 harvest and any changes in any independent information they have. So it's a big difference between benchmark.
my follow-up question then is back to what he also mentions in his letter, the 400% difference between one season and the previous seven seasons. You know, I mean, it seems to me that that, as we talked about earlier in early discussions you and I've had, this data seems outside. It is an outlier. It can be called into question, and you've kind of
it's a tough situation because everything seems indirect to us. Because I'm going to answer a little bit differently here. Even this year, we have MRIP. Right here, we have MRIP. We're going to be out there doing the, if you want to call them intercepts, or the assignments where we go for 6 hours at a time and collect information from those who come in and measure some of their fish, ask how many fish are in the cooler, ask them how many fish they released. We're doing that. But we aren't doing the analysis. So as soon as we get that data, we funnel it up to what's known as the Atlantic Coastal Cooperative Statistics Program, ACCSP, and they then work with that, and then it goes up to National Marine Fisheries Service for the final, what's called an estimate. So this spike, as Dr. Neal mentioned it, you know, you can go round and round about it. We have been in a situation before where we've been pretty adamant on summer flounder that there is no way that wave two, which is March and April, produced 95,000 summer flounder, which was more than the rest of wave three and four combined, which are big waves. Lewis spent many times looking at that. The estimate's still there. But about a spike, you know, you have to take it in reason that one of the comments I had, and the person's very nice, but one of the comments I had in one of the letters was, you saw us catching fish. You saw the towers. Why didn't you stop us? And, you know, we had information about the northern neck being loaded in 2015. I don't have any proof or data to rebut that data is the problem. But I think if you have reason, then you say, okay, is it half? Is that reasonable? Is it 60%? Is it 70%? No matter what you do, and include North Carolina in this, it seems to be a problem. Seems to be a problem. And the problem's exacerbated by where we all stand in the solution. But I think we're getting more traction lately from the ASMFC and the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council to, not have this happen like this again.
I would hope so.
Right.
Ms. Erskine.
So, Rob, I think I heard you correct before about North Carolina when you mentioned the other states and what's taken place. And I just wanted to ask a question specifically about North Carolina. So, did I understand correctly that they voted at their commission meeting to go out of compliance with the June 20th?
They, by virtue of their actions, are out of compliance. Yes, by virtue of their actions. And I have it. I have it right here.
Oh, okay, so, great.
North Carolina moved up 4 inches in the fork length, established a four-vessel limit, which is fairly good from everything I've heard from our fishermen when they tried to discuss those type options. One fish for the pier and shore, and then we had some comments on this, the private boat, only a two-fish vessel limit, and you can only fish those 3 days, and then close the waters on September 30th. So what I said before, Mr. Erskine, was that We know what North Carolina has done typically based on the data from 2013 to 15, and we know from July 1 on what they're capable of doing, which is a, you know, 9-10% of what they typically harvest. But now we also have the 21st of June up to July 1, so it's going to add on to that. And the concern is that this buffer, if I can call it that, between the ACT at 500,000 pounds and the ACL at 620,000 pounds, is probably not going to absorb that plus any changes we've had here this spring. And I think that's maybe the situation. But yeah.
I have a follow-up question.
Mr. Erskine.
So I guess, and I'm not exactly sure I'm going to be able to get to the what I really want to know. Based on those three limits that they put in place, the charter, the pier shore, and the private boat, where would it be projected that they should close their fishery? Now, they say they're closing the waters on September 30th. But and what I'm trying to get at is, you mentioned in the beginning that Virginia, when we looked at all the information, the best that could be done after the June 20th with the limitations in place in Virginia was, I think, 8 days.
Right.
So based on those three limitations that North Carolina put in place, when should they close their fishery after June 20th?
I think early on when National Marine Fisheries Service did the joint North Carolina, Virginia analyses, it still ended up June 26th. And you might wonder about that because ours were June 28th, mm-hmm. the best. But consider for ours, it was a 51-inch total length and one fish boat limit. So when we looked with North Carolina, it still did not extend that season. So anything here is going to and clobber. Going to clobber what could have been done joint-wise, and not to mention, fishermen are going to want to catch cobia. And this is most of what we heard, and there's a lot more knowledgeable fishermen here about this than I am, but the northeastern part of North Carolina was the segment that was going to be impacted or would be impacted by June 20th. And this is a lot of what this response was. So the idea was, because of the migratory path, North Carolina would have done fairly well except for that northeastern segment. But that won't mean Virginia boats won't be down there and lower North Carolina boats won't be up there. It's part of what goes on in the fisheries.
Thank you.
May I interject with a question along those lines? The migratory path of this species after spawning, August, Jan to July, August, up here, they head back down the coast. When do they clear North Carolina heading back down the coast?
I think there's remnant fish there throughout. Some of our fishermen can probably tell you, but it's just that it's not much beyond, August to speak of. And you see that they have closure September 30th.
How about a rephrase?
Sure.
A rephrase. As the fish migrate back down the coast, when will they hit North Carolina's border in September, before September 30th? Question mark?
Joe Cimino would like to tell you the fish move out and down.
Back to the pelagic nature of the species and the name is they actually move off. Unlike striped bass that may stay close to shore, they tend to move far offshore and then at some point head back down. Yeah. Hopefully the plastic won't treat
them. So no second chances.
Okay. Just making sure.
I know. I was listening to Joe, too, in the back of my mind.
Mr. Ballard.
Can you give us any color to what the reaction to North Carolina's move has been on the council or with National Marine Fisheries?
I had an email from Dr. Duvall, and it's hard for me to read into exactly what they're doing. But she did say that she's going to have to take their measures and accountability for what those measures might be in terms of harvest and go to see Dr. Roy Crabtree of National Fisheries Service. That's already in the works. Again, that's the input part. So she's going to have to figure out what could happen, and then later on we're going to know. Clearly, Dr. Duvall, who I haven't said a whole lot about, I've mentioned her a few times, but she has been a champion of Virginia throughout this process, and I suspect while the framework was going on, some folks thought that was for this year. It was actually for 2017. Dr. Duvall was nice enough, since Virginia was not down there, that we had her phone and her attention on the email, so she was very receptive that way. And you can see by the depth, and you get a chance to really go over everything of her response to Congressman Whitman, that she has really been right in front the whole time. But North Carolina itself, I think they took a gamble that it's up to what happens. And it's a situation where I do think they were trying to take care of that northeastern segment of the state more than anything.